Otto Hammerschmidt and the others were gone. Maria Leuden was beside Annie. The mortar bombardment of the first camp had stopped more than an hour ago, and Captain Svetlana Grubashikova's women were massing for attack. And what had happened to Annie's husband and brother? Annie Rubinstein worked the bolt of the M16 and charged the chamber, leaving the selector on safe for the moment. Maria had an M16 as well. Annie liked Maria, and Michael loved her, whether he knew it or not. Annie trusted Maria's good judgment that if Michael didn't know it, he soon would. If any of them survived this latest encounter with evil.
I think they are going to attack us.
I think you're right.
I wonder if Michael is all right. And your husband too, of course.
Annie didn't know what to say. Grubashikova's people were definitely getting ready to move, and not to a different neighborhood. She moved the M16 selector to Otto.
Where is Otto?
Getting into position down there, I hope. Be ready, Maria.
What will they do to us if they win?
Since you wouldn't want to know, the logical thing is to keep them from winning. Hang in there, Maria.
I will. Yes.
Annie debated if one really decent shot could take out Grubashikova. If only her father could have been with them behind his Steyr-Mannlicher SSG sniper rifle. She felt tears welling up in her eyes. He was dead. They never really said that he was, but they all felt it. Michael and Paul didn't want to believe it, and maybe it was a sign of their strength that even though inside them somewhere they did believe it, they still kept looking for him. But she would have known, somehow. Annie moved her selector back to safe. Whether or not her father was alive, battle would come soon enough. Natalia Anastasia Tyamarovna asked Commander Darkwood for his knife as soon as she reached the bridge. He sat at what looked like a navigation station, Sam Aldridge in what would have been the command chair, his feet resting on Sarovsky's chest. She noticed, too, that Darkwood was wounded. Against his protests, Natalia knelt beside him at the navigation station. Using the first aid kit from the bulkhead nearby, she saw to his wound, quickly but adequately.
We should be rendezvousing with the Reagan in a couple of minutes. Don't worry, Major. We'll get out of this.
You remind me of John Rourke.
For her, it was the ultimate compliment she could give any man besides John Rourke.
Your eyes remind me of my mother's eyes. They were blue like that. Dr. Rourke's a very lucky man.
Everyone misunderstands. He is married.
Yeah, well, we all have problems.
His wife is a wonderful person, and he loves her a great deal. He was never unfaithful to her with me.
Why was she telling this almost total stranger this?
Yeah, well, then he must be a man of iron will, your Dr. Rourke.
She felt her cheeks warming again.
Your wound isn't deep, but you could use having a doctor take a look at it.
Know anybody who's any good?
Yes, I do.
I'll keep that in mind. That man under Sam's feet, do you know him?
He was sent by my husband as his delivery boy.
She looked at Sarovsky, set down the medical kit, and picked up Darkwood's fighting knife.
Your husband?
The most evil man on earth, I think.
He's a marshal? That's an old Russian term for a general, isn't it?
He has an army. If an alliance between the Russians you fight and my husband becomes reality, then...
Major, Natalia, listen. Do you think you could persuade our friend to tell us where he's supposed to meet your husband? I mean, after all, your husband's apparently expecting an island-class submarine. This very one. Such an important man. I guess I was thinking, if we make it out of this alive, it might be a real nice gesture on our parts if we didn't just leave your husband standing there waiting for his ship to come in, so to speak.
Jason Darkwood grinned at her. Natalia stood up, the knife in her fist.
This is a good knife, Captain Darkwood.
Natalia flipped the knife over, caught it by the blade, then spun it once more, catching it by the handle.
Yes, quite well balanced. Sam, hold Captain Sarovsky down for me.
My pleasure, Major.
There was fear in Sarovsky's hard eyes. It was justified. She knelt beside his face and touched the knife to his throat. It was perfectly justified.
Where are you supposed to bring me, Captain?
Comrade Major, have you no loyalty?
Oh, I have loyalty. But unlike your loyalty, it is not misplaced. This is a very fine knife, and I imagine it is very sharp. And if you know me by reputation, You know that I am very good with a knife. Either tell me where you are to meet Marshal Karamazov and when, or we will both find out together just how sharp this very knife happens to be.
You wouldn't.
She shifted the knife to her left hand. With her right hand, she reached down to his crotch and found the zipper in front of his uniform.
Oh!
She reached inside his pants.
Wait! Please! I will tell you!
Where and when?
She drew her hand back, but brought the knife to his throat.
The island of Qingmiandao in the Formosa Strait. The rendezvous was to be...
Look at your watch.
He raised his left wrist.
About 4 hours. Qingmiandao.
Natalia moved the knife.
Kemoy.
If they could trap Vladimir, then kill him. If. It would have been slow going with the trucks filled with the internees from the death camp, but by now, certainly, Han had reached the J7V and used its radio to call in help. By now, help would be coming. Perhaps a large German force, or perhaps only some German aircraft lifting in Chinese troops. The Soviet mortar bombardment would start, softening them up, but they would have to be very careful of the range, because despite Captain Grubashikova's bravado, Annie knew, the last thing the Russians wanted was to explode the trucks loaded with the deadly gas. Annie had a sudden flash of inspiration.
Maria, you and Malin, get the others together and get them to barricade themselves immediately around the gas trucks.
But if the trucks are hit, Annie...
If the trucks are hit, any men in the vicinity will be affected anyway. But the nearer we all are to the trucks, the more careful the Russians will have to be with their fire. Just do it.
What about you?
Annie looked at the girl and smiled.
I'll be right along.
If she could hold on to this position long enough, Grubashikova would lead her female soldiers up the hill. Once Grubashikova was in range, Annie's abilities with the M16 could do the rest. Lang had sufficient presence of mind, despite his lack of skill, to summon Darkwood to the sonar station. For that, Darkwood was grateful.
I don't know what the noise is, sir, but it seems to come from all four of those island classers that are dogging us.
Darkwood took the headset and listened, then checked the visual interpretation displays on Lang's computer consoles.
You may not know shit from Shinola about sonar, but thank God you thought to ask. Four wire guides.
Darkwood crossed to the navigation station in three strides and threw himself down behind the console.
Sam, relay these orders to engineering.
There was one chance against four wire guides in a vessel that couldn't outrun them.
15 degrees right rudder and maintain full flank speed. Stand by for rudder changes.
His eyes jumped from the forward video display and the plot. They were alongside the volcanic vent that was the source of geothermal energy for the Soviet domes and for Midwake. The only chance was to take the island classer into the vent.
Rudder amidships, and all back 1/3.
He worked the diving planes down as they neared the vent.
15 degrees left rudder, and back to all ahead full.
There was a pinnacle of rock rising almost directly ahead of them.
Rudder amidships, all stop. Blow auxiliary tanks 1, 3, 2, and 4 now. 10 degrees right rudder, all ahead full now. Sam, tell him.
What he was doing was like skimming a rock off the water, he hoped.
10 degrees right rudder.
The hull scraped against the upthrusting rock. They felt the drag, and then there was a lurch, and the island classer was moving up and ahead.
Rudder amidships, back 1/3.
He worked the diving planes again as the vent opened before them.
15 degrees left rudder, all stop, 10 degrees left rudder.
The submarine settled into the vent. The composite video display looked like a laser light show, volcanic sediment rising in showers of spray and bursts of color.
5 degrees right rudder, all ahead 2/3. Tell engineering to advise me if hull temperatures reach into the danger zone. Rudder amidships and all ahead full. Sonar, what's the story on those four wire guides?
Looks like we're still on our tail, Captain. But my sonar is going nutso. There's noise everywhere.
Keep your fingers crossed those four wire guides are having the same difficulty.
The island classer rocked violently to starboard. A brilliant flash of light from the port side of the ship washed over the composite video display. Darkwood nearly slid out of his chair.
Sam, tell engineering to talk to me.
This is Natalia. If I'm reading the scanners correctly, we're not taking in water.
He hoped she was reading the damaged scanners correctly. The vent widened.
5 degrees right rudder.
The island classer ran dead center along the vent's course.
Rudder amidships. Sonar, how's the wire guide situation?
Nothing, sir. Uh-oh.
What's uh-oh mean?
Four more sounds like the ones before. Maybe they just launched four more after us, Captain.
If the Russians were insane enough to risk a nuclear detonation in the vent that supplied both their cities with geothermal power, it was a drastic measure. And drastic measures require drastic countermeasures.
Communications, anything from the Reagan?
Nothing, sir.
Good. Get the hell out of that chair and slide over here to the weapons station, quick. I need direct control of the cluster charges, and now, Bacon.
Aye, sir.
Sam, alert the aft torpedo room that on my signal, I want all four aft tubes launched simultaneously. Bacon, you at the weapons station?
Sure am, sir.
Get ready to fire the ship's entire complement of cluster charges on my signal.
Arming now, sir. I think.
That's right. Fill me with confidence, Bacon. Be ready. Sam, tell engineering that I want them monitoring all damage control scanners until I say otherwise. Sonar, what's the story?
The remaining three of our first four wire guides are right on our tail, sir, about 100 yards off the stern. The other four wire guides are moving faster, about another 100 yards back.
Tell engineering I want rudder amidships, Sam, and full flank speed maintained no matter what. Bacon, how are those cluster charges coming?
Armed and ready, sir.
Good man. On my command, fire! Sam, tell aft torpedo room to fire tubes 1, 2, 3, and 4, now!
The island cluster seemed to vibrate, or maybe it was his imagination, he didn't know which, as he hauled back on the diving planes.
Tell engineering I want every ounce of air they've got, and right now!
Advising engineering.
The video display was a blur now as the island cluster rose. The detonating cluster charges caused landslides on all sides now as the vent collapsed around them.
More air!
I'm telling them, hold on. You got all the air there is.
Tell them to redline the turbines. If I can't have more air, I gotta have more power.
Advising engineering.
Darkwood watched the depth gauge. The island cluster's rate of ascent increased drastically. His body crushed back into the chair.
Sonar, can you make out what happened to those wire guides?
Going deaf, sir, I think. Yeah, just like the other noise. Oh, there's one. Another one.
Holy shit!
Darkwood craned his neck to see Lang falling from his seat, holding his ears. So much for sonar.
Bacon, see to Lang if you can.
Aye, sir.
Sam, tell engineering to maintain revolutions no matter what the instrument panels say.
Right. What the hell are we doing?
Tell them. If we do it, I'll clue you in.
The depth gauge went wild. Darkwood's ears popped as his fists white-knuckled on the diving plane controls.
I'm back on sonar, sir. I've lost track completely of all wire guides. I think we got them.
Good man. Stay with it. Bacon, get on communications and hail the Reagan.
Aye, sir.
If you get her, tell her we're surfacing.
Sir, I've got the Reagan. Wait a minute. They say one island-class submarine apparently damaged. The Reagan fired wire guide, sir. Hey! Another island-class are damaged. The Wayne is coming up.
Tell Mr. Sebastian to hold off 500 yards from our bow as we surface and to disengage with the island-classers and see if they run home to Mama. Convey my compliments to the captain of the Wayne and ask Commander Pilgrim if he would kindly take up a position 500 yards off our stern as we surface and suggest that he might care to disengage with the island-classers.
Aye, sir.
Tell engineering back 1/3.
Natalia Tyomarovna stood on the missile deck of the island-classer. The wind in her hair felt good. The launch the island-classer sent to the Wayne was returning. Aboard the launch, she could see John Rourke. Michael Rourke stood at her right side. He told her about the internees Vladimir Karamazov brought to his death camp, about stealing the gas, that likely her husband's forces were trying even now to get it back. There were still so many things unresolved, but John was alive, and he was coming to her. It was hard to care about anything else, even though she knew she must. Jason Darkwood stood at her left side.
I'd always pictured life on the surface as harsh, but peaceful at least. From the way both of you talk, I'm getting the distinct impression we're all fighting the same war.
We are. Whether the enemy is my husband and his forces, or a man like Karenin, whom John killed, or a man like Fyodorovich, who's probably just finding out what happened, it doesn't matter.
I'm eager to discuss something with Dr. Rourke, something to our mutual advantage.
The launch slid alongside and moved into its berth. As she looked over the rail, John Rourke waved up at her. She blew him a kiss. He climbed the ladder. She stepped back.
Go ahead, Michael.
Michael looked at her for a moment.
You're a fine woman.
As his father stepped through the gap in the rail and onto the deck, Michael walked forward, and father and son embraced. Then John Rourke turned to Natalia. His hair was windblown. The black shirt he wore made his 5 o'clock shadow more visible than usual. His coloring was pale, but he strode confidently to her and swept her into his arms.
I'll always stay with you, as long as you want me to.
His lips touched her cheek, and he turned her face up toward his. His hands exuded strength and life. She wanted to cry and just have him hold her.
You seem marvelously recovered, sir. I'm Commander Jason Darkwood, captain of the Reagan. We've met, but I doubt you remember.
John Rourke held Natalia close against his left side as he extended his right hand. She kept her face against John's chest, her arms holding John tight against her. John Rourke and Jason Darkwood clasped hands.
Commander, it is a pleasure to meet you again and to be able to thank you for saving Natalia and for coming to the aid of my son here.
Rourke drew Michael against him, his right arm across his son's shoulders.
I will never be able to repay you.
Friends don't have to worry about that sort of thing, do they, Dr. Rourke?
No, they don't.
I'm sure you'd appreciate a tour of our captured Russian submarine, but it appears there are a few urgent considerations still remaining. Want to talk below or up here in the fresh air? I'll confess, for me, it's a novelty.
After the last few days, it's become a refreshing novelty for me as well.
John looked at Michael.
How are your mother and sister, and Paul, and that Maria Lloyden?
Michael has been filling me in. John, there are some real problems.
Natalia took her face away from John's chest and shook her hair in the wind.
And it appears we also have a chance to nail your Marshal Karamazov. Major Chemerovna was supposed to be handed over to him on the island of Chinmendao. It is sometimes called Kemoy in the Formosa Strait.
Darkwood consulted his peculiar-looking watch.
In just about 2 hours from now, he was expecting an island-class submarine, which this is, and he was expecting her to be brought to him by men in Marine Spetsnaz uniforms, which I am wearing. And we even have the commander of the detail aboard with us, a certain Captain Sarovsky. Not a nice man. Anything interesting suggest itself to you, Dr. Rourke?
Quite a few things. Do you have an extra uniform in my size?
I think that could be arranged, Doctor.
John looked down at Natalia.
Now, what about Annie and everybody else?
Mom's in Iceland. She's safe.
Michael stood at the apex of the triangle formed by Jason Darkwood and his father, Natalia, still in the crook of John's arm.
Annie, Paul, Maria, and myself, with the help of Han and Otto Hammerschmidt and a truly small force of Chinese, all eventually wound up looking for the two of you in the same place, Karamazov's base camp. We didn't find what we were looking for, of course, but we found out that Karamazov had picked up several hundred Chinese and was taking them to a sort of death camp, planning to use his gas on them. Maybe as some kind of a test or something, I'm not sure. So, we stole it. Bluffed our way out with the Chinese prisoners, and I went back one more time to see if there was any sign of the two of you. That's when I saw this submarine surfacing. I was watching from up in the rocks overlooking the sea, and I kept watching. An officer from this submarine brought Karamazov a gift, Natalia's guns and her knife, and I figured that these people had you both. I swam out to the submarine, and things were going great. Then, not so great, I got myself nailed.
But he also had himself free by the time we took over the ship.
John said nothing for a moment.
Michael, with the gas and the people you freed from the camp, what is your assessment of what would have been the next logical move for Paul and Annie and the others to make?
Maria and I talked about it briefly before I switched to one of the trucks we were using to haul out the internees. I didn't think Karamazov would let us get very far with the gas, but I also thought that the gas would have been his primary concern.
Could Han or Otto summon help?
We had radios, but since we pulled the thing off in the dark, we had a good chance of eluding them temporarily. If we used the radios, we would have called them into our position, the Russians. I don't know what they did after that.
John Rourke looked at Commander Darkwood. They were the same height, Natalia noticed. Exactly.
Probably the situation with the rest of my family and the stolen gas has been resolved. But if it hasn't, they could be in deep trouble. Could I make a twofold request?
Certainly. And since I'm out of range of Midwake, I can't radio them and ask for permission, so I'll have to use my own discretion. Request away. What are you thinking, Doctor?
Can the Wayne, with my son aboard her, make best speed possible to the coast near Karamazov's base camp and let off my son and some Marines. Michael can lead them in toward where Annie and the others might still be. Then, the Wayne proceeds along the coast, and if the Wayne has the capabilities, begin a bombardment of Karamazov's base camp.
Darkwood grinned mischievously.
Dr. Rourke, aside from the fact that the skipper of the Wayne and myself would be taking it upon ourselves to declare war on a foreign power, I see no fault in the idea at all. And since I am out of radio contact with Midwake, I can't ask their advice. So if Walter Pilgrim isn't any brighter than I think he is...
the captain of the Wayne struck me as being quite an intelligent man.
Yes, but he's as fond of getting into tight places as I am. So if Walter Pilgrim goes along with it, I believe we can land some Marines and then create quite a diversionary bombardment of Marshal Karamazov's camp. And the Reagan can hang back while we take this island classer, which has a full complement of nuclear missiles, by the way, so we do have to be a little careful not to lose her, while we take this island classer right up to Marshal Karamazov's doorstep.
He'll recognize you, John. You can't.
John looked at Natalia.
I can stay to the rear of the group. He won't recognize me until it's too late. You're the one who'll have to be careful.
I need my guns and my knife back anyway.
I got mine. Found them in an arms locker below.
Michael lay his hands on the two Beretta pistols stuffed into his belt.
Then we have a plan, gentlemen and madam.
Yes, my friend, we have a plan.
The plan frightened Natalia, but there was no other way. Paul Rubinstein's truck slipped a tread on the half-track and he abandoned it. He found no survivors in the first camp, but felt certain most escaped because he only found four bodies. He followed the trail of the Soviet vehicles through sparse snow. The ground was soft enough that a blind man could have followed the tread imprints with his cane. Now he was upon the Soviet position at the rear of their lines. Mortars fired every few seconds. Explosions erupted at the top of the hill beneath which the Soviet positions were located. There seemed to be no answering fire from the hilltop. This worried him, but he rationalized that Annie, Hammerschmidt, or Hahn would have known conservation of ammunition was more important at this stage, because the mortar fire had only begun within the last 45 minutes. Then he saw a movement in the rocks below him and to the north. He saw a shock of blonde hair.
Hammerschmidt?
Hammerschmidt would have done the logical thing for a man with his training. Assembled a small unit and left the camp at the top of the hill, perhaps under cover of darkness, and circled behind the Soviet position. Paul started working his way obliquely toward where he momentarily saw the German commando captain, his Schmeisser ready. Annie Rubinstein burrowed as deep into the rocks as she could. She pulled her heavy shawl over her head for as much protection against the constant rain of rocks and dirt as possible. The noise of the explosions as the mortar rounds hit unnerved her. Each time one of the mortar rounds fell near her, she could feel her skin go cold and her stomach churn. But waiting here was the only chance if somehow Hammerschmidt's mission failed, if somehow Hahn had not already gotten help to speed toward them. Annie had a plan. Captain Svetlana Grubashikova would have to take her forces up the hillside, and when she did, Captain Grubashikova would be a dead woman. Annie Rourke Rubinstein clutched her M16 tight against her, protecting the rifle as much as she protected herself, and waited as the rain of debris poured down around her and her ears rang with the cacophony made by the explosions. The woman Michael Rourke ran beside through the surf was so ridiculously pretty it was hard to imagine she was a Marine lieutenant. He grew up seeing Marines in videotape movies at the retreat. If they weren't John Wayne, they all tried to look like him. But Lieutenant Lily St. James, security officer of the Wayne, didn't look a bit like the man for whom the vessel was named. She was gorgeous. Blonde, blue-eyed, rosy-cheeked.
Let's roll, Marines!
They broke from the surface and made for the rocks, Michael right beside her. They took up defensive positions at the height of the beachhead. Michael slid into a niche of rock beside her. Her assault rifle in her right fist, as though it didn't weigh a thing, Lieutenant St. James looked at him, and a little smile crossed her lips.
Where to now, Mr. Rourke? I have orders that tell me to take orders from you until we reach the objective. So, where to?
Michael pulled the compass from his borrowed USMC battle dress utilities. Lieutenant St. James was already spreading out the rough map he had drawn for her and copied for Commander Pilgrim, the captain of the Wayne.
As I told you before, Lieutenant, I can lead us to the first camp, and after that, if... as I suspect, they've abandoned it. We've got to find them.
Unless, of course, the Ruskies are already hitting them. In that event, we shouldn't have too much difficulty finding them at all, should we? Lead the way, Mr. Rourke.
Yes, ma'am. May I...
What?
Follow me?
Let's move out, Marines!
Michael and the Marines bolted from the rocks in a dead run, Lieutenant St. James right beside him. He looked back toward the beach. The rubber boats that brought them were already halfway back to the Wayne. John Rourke stood on the bridge of the Soviet Island Classer, Natalia beside him. He looked at her. Beneath her black jumpsuit, she had secreted his Sting 1A black chrome, and across her shoulder, she wore a shoulder holster for one of the U.S. service pistols. The 2418 A2s looked interesting enough, but he wasn't about to exchange his Detonics 45s for a set of them.
Mr. Sebastian, our position from Chinmandao Island, please.
Position as follows, Captain. 23 nautical miles north by northeast. Estimated time of arrival to our calculated offshore position, approximately 15 minutes. The Reagan is 3 minutes behind us, Captain.
Very good, Mr. Sebastian.
Darkwood rotated his chair to face Rourke and Natalia. Although Darkwood imported some of his own people from the Reagan, there was still an abundance of vacant seats on the bridge.
I think your latter idea is the best course of action. That way, if Karamazov sees you, so what?
Exactly. If he sees me as a supposed prisoner, it may arouse his interest, but shouldn't terribly arouse his suspicions. Who's minding the Reagan with your first officer here and the others?
My engineering officer, Lieutenant Commander Hartnett, has a con, and we're filling in the best we can otherwise.
Several officers and some enlisted personnel came over from the Reagan. Lieutenant Commander T.J. Sebastian, the medical officer, Lieutenant Commander Margaret Barrow, the sonar operator, Lieutenant Junior Grade Julie Kelly, and a machinist first class named Wilbur Hong. The skeleton crew and the security contingent under the command of Sam Aldridge, assisted by Lieutenant Tom Stanhope, were filling in at whatever jobs needed to be done aboard the huge craft. In the brig were several Russian prisoners taken when the commando team captured the island classer. Darkwood said they would be debriefed by hypnotherapy and then incarcerated in Midwake until a prisoner exchange needed to be worked out with the Russians, or until the Midwake taxpayers got tired of feeding them and returned them anyway. Aldridge and Stanhope appeared on the bridge, a Russian officer between them, his hands bound. The uniform was familiar to John Rourke, the black uniform of the KGB Elite Corps. Sam Aldridge was dressed in some of his scuba gear. It looked fascinating, and Rourke was determined to try it if he could. Tom Stanhope was outfitted as a Soviet naval officer. Darkwood smiled at the Russian.
Ah, Captain Sarovsky. So happy you could join us. I had such fun the last time you joined us on the bridge.
Darkwood massaged his ribcage, where an hour ago Dr. Barrow, the Reagan's medical officer, sterilized and bandaged it.
You will all die.
Ah, then Captain Aldridge and Lieutenant Stanhope have been filling you in, I see.
John Rourke studied Sarovsky for a moment, and Sarovsky turned toward him.
You!
Captain, the one thing that's keeping you alive is the fact that we need your assistance with our operation. We could get along without you, but with you present, it will make things a little more believable. Now, Natalia and I will both be posing as prisoners. We will both be heavily armed. Commander Darkwood, Lieutenant Stanhope, and some others from Captain Aldridge's Marines will be posing as officers and men of this vessel, assisting you in delivering us to Karamazov. Captain Aldridge and the rest of his Marines will come up behind Karamazov's position after exiting this vessel and swimming in. By the time we surface, they'll be in position. I'm not so naive as to assume that this will all go like clockwork and that Karamazov's fate is already sealed. But I'd say we have a good chance. You do exactly as you're told, and you'll get out of this alive. We can send you back to Karamazov's army or drop you anyplace else. That's immaterial. You cooperate, and you have my word on your freedom and good health. Don't cooperate, and I'll personally break your neck. Is that clear?
Yes.
Good. Then here's how we do it. You will be completely uniformed and have your pistol at your side with an empty magazine in place, as well as an empty magazine on your belt. We've already taken care of that. You will do as you normally would. Take us right up to your hero, Marshal. When Natalia or I shove you aside, hit the dirt and take cover and just worry about staying alive. We'll do the rest. Play it straight, and you'll have the same chances of getting out of this alive as we have.
The hero, Marshal, will have many men there. And helicopters. You will not have a chance.
But we'll have the Reagan offshore.
and our deck guns can hit with pinpoint accuracy. The helicopters won't be a factor. Although, I confess, I'd rather take a ride on one than blow one up. I've only seen pictures of them. Dr. Rourke's word will be binding on us all. If you do your part, no matter how this turns out, you'll be free. We want Karamazov, not you. No offense.
Aldridge looked at his wristwatch.
I gotta go, Captain.
Good luck, Sam.
Aldridge left the bridge.
Mr. Stanhope, leave our friend Captain Sarovsky here on the bridge while you coordinate with the rest of our party. Meet you by the main hatch.
Will he be okay here, sir?
John Rourke looked at Stanhope, then at Sarovsky.
Trust me, he'll be just fine.
Be about your business, Mr. Stanhope.
Yes, sir.
Stanhope did a neat about face and left the bridge as well.
Sit down, Captain Sarovsky. Just make yourself comfortable. Right there by the warfare station. Oh, if you touch anything, Natalia has my authorization to cut off your hand, and I'll even loan her the knife.
John Rourke smiled and reached to his side where the Grain Life Support System 10 was sheathed. He unsheathed it and handed the knife to Natalia.
There. She can use mine.
Paul Rubinstein linked up with Otto Hammerschmidt and the others without much trouble. He quickly learned that Hahn took the trucks loaded with the freed internees of the camp and went for help, but hadn't been heard from since. Paul then continued on with Hammerschmidt toward a position in some high rock 75 yards to the rear of the Soviet lines. He was amazed Karamazov sent an entire female force against the hilltop, amazed and sobered. It meant Karamazov was willing to explode the gas if he had to in order to prevent anyone else from having it, ready to risk his entire army if the wind were blowing in the wrong direction. Hammerschmidt nodded.
Open fire!
Paul Rubinstein brought the metal stock of the MP-40 to his right shoulder, concentrating the submachine gun's firepower toward the nearest mortar emplacement. Lieutenant Liu, part of the Chinese force, worked a multi-barreled grenade launcher with devastating effectiveness.
That machine gun emplacement! Attack!
Otto and Paul were up, running, clambering over the rocks. The Soviet forces responded with small arms fire. Hammerschmidt grabbed a grenade from his belt, hurling it toward the machine gun emplacement.
I thought you wanted the gun! I do! I never put the pin on the grenade! Look!
The machine gun crew ran from the entrenched position. Paul opened up with the Schmeichel. Hammerschmidt's assault rifle thundered beside him. The two men dove into the machine gun emplacement. Hammerschmidt snatched up the grenade. Otto pulled the pin and hurled the grenade toward the fleeing machine gun crew.
I know. Waste not, want not.
They ducked as the grenade blew. Dirt rained down. Then they put their weapons to use. They heard the noise roughly 30 minutes after overpowering the two-man team with the Soviet half-track truck and stealing it. Michael Rourke drove. Lieutenant St. James sat beside him in the cab. Some of her Marines hung onto the truck cab on each side, riding the running boards. The rest huddled ready in the truck bed. The tarp pulled away for clear fields of fire when they reached the sounds of the battle. The ground rose and fell sharply all around them. High ridges, shallow, dish-shaped valleys, steeply rising hills splotched here and there with snow. Michael kept to the low ground for the sake of the vehicle, pushing it. The half-track bounced and jostled over the ground, vibrating maddeningly with each pothole of barred rock. But the battle sounds were getting louder. His sister Annie, Paul, Maria, and Otto, they needed his team. Annie Rourke credited the Soviet commander, Svetlana Grubashikova, with tremendous courage or insanity. With Otto's small force behind her, she ordered a charge up the hill. She ran at the head of her troops. The bullets from their assault rifles filled the air like a swarm of insects. Annie crouched in her position, waiting her chance, the M16 resting in her calm hands. There was a crack between the rocks, and she could see Grubashikova intermittently through it as the Russian woman led her troops.
Come on, lady. Just a little more. Come on. You can do it. Another 50 yards. Come on.
Annie lost sight of Grubashikova, but then...
25 more yards, lady. Come on.
Grubashikova ran to the head of a dozen females in Elite Corps battle dress utilities, the army troopers behind them. She looked to be turning around, saying something to one of them as she ran. And now six of them broke off at a tangent to the right. Grubashikova led the other six left.
Close enough.
Annie moved the safety tumbler to semi and pushed up to her knees just as she rehearsed it, resting the rifle, its front handguard wrapped in a section of blanket to make for a more effective contact against the hard surface of the rocks. She cheeked the rifle, seeing Grubashikova over her sights, then seeing her across them.
Goodbye.
Grubashikova swerved, her legs buckled, her right arm snapped out, and her rifle sailed from her hands. She staggered, twisting once, and fell backward. Annie Rubinstein tucked down as withering gunfire hammered into the rocks around her. Grubashikova was dead, and now was the time, if ever there would be a time.
Maria! Let's go!
Maria and a half dozen Chinese soldiers formed around her, swooped down the hill. Annie was up, running beside them, her M16 set to full auto as they started down the hillside. Roldog and his dog bringing up the rear, her two huge warriors bounding gracefully over the rocks. Paul Rubinstein took the machine gun from its mounts. He'd seen guys do it plenty of times in centuries-old movies. It didn't look that tough then.
Oh, whoa, this is a heavy sucker, Otto.
Paul hustled beside the German commando captain, closing now with the forces still at the base of the hill. The enemy mortar emplacements were useless against this attack from their rear, but the enemy numbers were still too high. They threw themselves down behind one of the Russian trucks. Paul rolled from behind it and balanced the machine gun enough that he could fire from beneath the undercarriage. Then the pattern of the gunfire changed.
A single Russian truck, but there are people firing from the truck bed. I don't recognize their uniforms, but they are firing at the Russian forces, it looks like.
Paul Rubinstein had to see. He rolled back from beneath the undercarriage. He hauled the Russian binoculars to his eyes. He recognized the uniform, but he didn't believe his eyes.
Yeah, but I'm crazy and blind too. Shit, they're U.S. Marines!
Michael Rourke geared down, taking the truck past the left flank of the Russian force along the steeply inclined hillside. Lieutenant St. James fired through the open window into the Russians. They were all women.
The gas!
He stomped the accelerator pedal even harder. Annie Rubinstein closed with one of the Elite Corps women. Both their rifles empty, the Russian soldier inverted her rifle like a club and charged for Annie. Annie stepped back and let the M16 fall to her side on its sling. She drew the Scoremaster from her right hip. She had holstered it, cocked and locked, and she thumbed down the safety. The .45 bucked in her fist and the Russian woman's body flew backward. As she looked up, she saw a truck coming. She dropped to her knees, both fists on the butt of the Scoremaster, the muzzle aimed for the truck cab. As she dropped her finger to the trigger, she caught a momentary flash of the driver's face.
Michael?
It couldn't be Michael. The soldiers from the truck bed bolted out, closing with the Soviet forces hand to hand as the truck stopped. If it were Michael... Overhead, she heard the sounds of gunships and her heart sank. Karamazov was finally committing gunships. She got to her feet and looked back toward the truck. Michael was clambering across its hood and diving into a half dozen of the female troopers. Annie ran toward him.
Michael! Michael!
As she ran, she saw the uniforms of the men from the truck, and two of them weren't even men. The uniforms were camouflage fatigues, and emblazoned in the olive drab on their chests was the word Marine. Michael was to his feet, a rifle butt smashing upward in his hands and impacting the jaw of one of the Russian women. He swung the rifle now like a club, beating the Russians down. There was a Marine beside him, and as the Marine dodged, the helmet fell off, and blonde hair cascaded out of it. A woman. Annie was beside them in the next instant, a pistol in each hand, firing point blank into the Russians. The gunships were coming in low now, and she knew what they would do.
Michael! Soviet gunships!
You all right?
Yeah! What the... Who are these people?
The Marines have landed, Annie!
The Soviet gunships are coming! Look!
Michael looked where she pointed.
Shit!
He looked to right and left.
Lieutenant St. James! Soviet gunships coming off the horizon!
Annie rammed a fresh magazine into her M16.
Where's Paul?
He went after you!
Oh, damn it!
You swear too much.
He can't have come after me. Where's Maria?
Out there, fighting.
20 yards away, the Russian woman leaned on her fighting knife, trying to drive it into Maria's chest. At a dead run, Paul thrust the submachine gun toward her. Maria fell to her knees. Paul dropped the MP40 on its sling.
Otto! Over here!
Paul!
With his left hand, Paul Rubinstein hauled Maria up from her knees and pulled her against him.
You all right?
Yes. Where's Michael?
It's a long story. Not a good one. Where's Annie?
She was heading towards that truck.
Yeah, we are too. Come on.
My rifle!
Leave it!
They ran, and Hammerschmidt closed with them.
Where's Michael? Answer me!
Paul started to tell her, and he stopped, almost losing his balance. He felt his face seam with a smile.
Holy. Right here. I don't know how, but come on.
They ran to the truck.
Paul! Thank God you're alive!
Paul Rubinstein looked past Michael Rourke.
Soviet gunships! Find cover and a good firing position! Do it now!
He heard a woman's voice in English shouting orders, and it wasn't his wife. He looked to the sound. A young, blonde-haired woman was forming up the Marines. Paul reached the truck.
Where's Annie?
In the cab, there.
Paul released Maria Lloyden's hand as she rushed into Michael's arms. Paul clambered up into the truck cab.
Paul!
She hugged him tight around the neck.
Gunship's coming in! Look out!
Paul pushed Annie down as machine gun fire ripped across the hood of the truck. Paul covered Annie as the windshield shattered, spraying over them. He let go of her and stabbed the Schmeisser through the shot-out window.
Paul, down here!
It was Michael's voice, and Paul grabbed Annie. They clambered out of the cab and under the truck with Michael, Maria Lloyden, Otto, the female Marine, and some of her troopers.
They got us good.
Shit!
Wait a minute. Hold on a second.
What?
I hear something.
You hear the enemy, lady.
No, wait!
I hear it too!
They wouldn't start the bombardment for another 5 minutes at least.
What bombardment?
They're timing a naval bombardment of Marshal Karamazov's base camp with Dr. Rourke's and Major Chemerovna's attempt to capture the Marshal.
Dr. Rourke? My father?
Dad and Natalia, too. They're alive, well, and they're going after Karamazov on an island in the Formosa Strait called Kamoy.
The Nixon-Kennedy debates, Paul Rubinstein thought.
They're alive? They're really alive? Well, where the hell did these Marines come from?
Paul looked at the Marine officer.
Midwake, sir. And there's lots more of us where we came from.
Don't ask.
Wait! So sounds! So's a German!
Hammerschmidt crawled out from under the truck. Paul let go of Annie and crawled out after him. In the northwestern sky, the helicopter armada approached like a swarm of black insects.
Woo!
Annie stood beside her laughing husband. Paul laughed as he realized he had just been rescued all in one day by the United States Marines, the Chinese Army, and the German Air Cavalry. He hugged his wife tight against him as the Soviet gunships veered back toward the sea. According to the black-faced Rolex on his left wrist, the naval bombardment of Karamazov's base camp would begin in precisely 2 minutes. John Rourke wound the nylon cord back around his wrists, looking at Natalia. She smiled, but her almost surreal blue eyes showed the fear he knew was there. The Island Classer's launch rolled over a breaker on its cushion of air and settled into the sand. They agreed not to speak out of character in the event Karamazov had them monitored by some type of parabolic microphone, or even something as simple as a lip reader. Darkwood elbowed Rourke as he stood.
Do not make any heroic attempts, Dr. Rourke.
Rourke almost smiled. Darkwood was enjoying his play acting. Rourke and Natalia stood. Darkwood and Stanhope climbed down out of the launch, some of their disguised Marines assisting them and keeping the launch steady. Then Sarovsky, who also looked as though he was playing it to the hilt, climbed down as well. As John and Natalia stepped from the launch, their hands bound in front, he looked up into the black rocks. If blood could turn cold, he felt his doing. Vladimir Karamazov walked down out of the rocks, surrounded by a dozen men in the black uniforms of the KGB Elite Corps, assault rifles slung at patrol positions beneath their right arms. Karamazov's hair had grayed slightly, but was still full. His posture was erect, his jaw firm, his eyes dark pinpoints of light as he drew closer. He wore black BDU pants, black jack boots, and a gray long-sleeved shirt under a black sleeveless padded vest. Part of the harness of his shoulder holster showed from beneath the vest's armholes. Darkwood and Stanhope flanked John Rourke and Natalia Chemerovna. Sarovsky strode just ahead of them. Three more Marines brought up the rear. Rourke didn't like that Karamazov brought so many men down with him. It might make Sarovsky confident enough to try something stupid. The sun was very bright, and John Rourke squinted against it. Karamazov, still 100 yards away, stopped.
He was not dead, Serovsky.
Rourke looked at Serovsky's back. Darkwood and Stanhope moved up a little to flank the elite corps officer.
Comrade Marshall, a submarine of the American attack class was intercepted, and Dr. Rourke was aborted, restored to his full health. It required considerable negotiation, but I was able to convince our comrades that Dr. Rourke should be brought to you as well.
Good work, Serovsky. My wife and her love.
Karamazov took a few paces further forward.
So, Dr. Rourke, after all this time, we at last meet on my own terms.
Serovsky walked forward, with the landing party close behind.
Where is the rest of the detail, Serovsky?
Serovsky had a rehearsed answer.
Comrade Marshall, there were only so many who could fit into the launch.
Karamazov stopped, his vest wide open, thumbs hooked into his belt. John Rourke could see Natalia's pistol stuffed in the waistband of the BDU pants beneath the belt. Vladimir Karamazov took a half step back and moved his hands from his pockets.
My hero Marshal, it is a trap!
John Rourke released the cord he held about his wrists and with his left hand drew the Grain Life Support System 10 knife. As Serovsky dropped, his spinal cord severed, Rourke grabbed for one of the twin stainless Detonics 45s beneath the borrowed winter coat. His right fist stabbed forward with the little Detonics.
Damn!
Vladimir Karamazov was already moving, dodging left. Rourke's bullet struck one of the KGB elite corpsmen surrounding the hero marshal. Natalia's pistols and Karamazov's fists spit fire. John Rourke stepped forward and shouldered Natalia away. Darkwood and Stanhope fired, dropping two more of the elite corpsmen. John Rourke felt a tongue of fire kiss his left bicep and he dropped to his knees. He fired again, a double tap. Chunks of rock exploded near where Karamazov's head had been as Karamazov ran up into the rocks. John Rourke had the second little Detonics out and fired. Karamazov's left leg buckled under him. Karamazov fell, lurching forward and out of sight into the rocks. Natalia fired. Rourke wiped his right sleeve across his eyes as he ran for the hill. Darkwood and Stanhope at his right, Natalia at his left, they ran after Karamazov. Rourke looked back once. Three Marines had fanned out to right and left into the rocks by the lapping surf, their Soviet assault rifles firing, elite corpsmen falling. Rourke emptied both pistols into his adversaries. He reached the rocks, rushing up the path in a dead run, ignoring the pain of his still tender abdominal injuries. It was Natalia's voice behind him. He changed out the magazine in one of the Detonics as gunfire continued from all directions. He raised the little Detonics in both fists and fired. Karamazov lurched forward, stumbled, then ran on. Rourke fired again and missed. Rourke kept running, Natalia almost passing him. Real pain burned in his abdomen. His breath came hard. He kept running. Natalia was even with him again. In her right fist, she held the American pistol. In her left, the blood-drenched knife John used to kill Serovsky. Karamazov ran toward the nearest helicopter, revving for takeoff. Rourke stabbed the little Detonics toward him, firing it out. Karamazov's body lurched once again. He stumbled to his knees, stumbled up, and ran on. John Rourke's body screamed at him to stop. He kept running. Karamazov staggered just 20 yards ahead. The hero marshal wheeled toward Rourke, Natalia's pistols in his fists. Rourke lurched forward as one of the .357 Magnum rounds ripped his left leg from under him. He looked at Natalia, her right arm limp at her side, her body thrown back against the rocks, her left fist still clutching the knife.
Get him! Yeah!
Rourke drew himself to his feet and forced himself forward, dragging his left leg. Karamazov's pistols were empty. He threw them one after the other. Rourke dodged the guns as they sailed toward him. Karamazov ran again toward the nearest chopper. The distance was less than 10 yards. Rourke's abdomen churned with pain, his left leg numbing. Karamazov stumbled, fell, spilled into the dirt and snow, and pushed himself up. John Rourke hurled himself toward Karamazov, reaching for the shoulders. Rourke had him, his hands closed over Karamazov's neck. Karamazov's left fist hammered up and Rourke sagged away. Karamazov scrambled to his feet. Gunfire ripped into the ground beside Rourke from the open helicopter door. Rourke pushed himself up and ran. gunfire streaked past from along the path in the black rocks. Rourke saw the body of the elite corpsman tumbling from the open fuselage, his chest stitched in red. Karamazov threw himself into the fuselage doorway, reaching for the fallen elite corpsman's assault rifle. John Rourke's hands closed on Karamazov's waist, and he threw his weight back, tearing Karamazov away from the helicopter as the gunship went airborne. The Reagan's deck guns opened up in the distance. Shells landed all around them as the mortal enemies rolled across the ground. Karamazov's fist hammered at Rourke's face, neck, and head. Karamazov jumped back and ran for the last chopper. Rourke lurched forward, to his knees, to his feet. More shells from the Reagan's deck guns. Helicopters exploded in the air and on the ground. Their fiery skeletons fell from the sky. As Rourke ran, he dodged chunks of burning debris.
Karamazov!
The hero marshal ran for the last of his helicopters. The machine already hovered 3 feet from the ground. From over the rise behind the last chopper, Rourke saw Aldridge and his Marines, their assault rifles blazing. Aldridge fired a grenade into the airship from the tube beneath the barrel of his rifle.
Karamazov!
Rourke stopped. Karamazov had reached the edge of the promontory on which the choppers had landed. He stood there. Rourke ran toward him. Karamazov's right hand moved to his shoulder holster, and John Rourke dodged left. Karamazov's right hand shot forward as he dropped to his left knee. In his fist was the little snub-nosed Smith & Wesson revolver he had carried for 5 centuries to use in this moment.
You are dead, John Rourke.
John Rourke stood there, hands clutched to his abdomen, about to throw himself against Karamazov and hurtle them both over the edge, onto the rocks in the sea below.
No, Vladimir.
Natalia rose up beside Karamazov. The hero marshal turned to look at her. In both her fists, she held the short sword-sized Life Support System 10. The steel moved over her head and around in an arc to her right. The grain knife finished its arc. Karamazov's body swayed. The little revolver fell from his limp right hand. The hero marshal's head separated from his neck and sailed into the void. Blood gushed into the air around Karamazov like a corona of light. The headless torso of the hero marshal, Vladimir Karamazov, rocked backward, fell into the sky, and plunged into the roiling sea. John Rourke closed his eyes. Karamazov, body and soul, was dead. Survivalist Midwake is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 1988, Jerry Ahern. Published by arrangement with Jerry and Sharon Ahern. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Mort Shelby, Thomas Penny, Nanette Savard, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Eric Messner, Sonny Lasky, James Konacek, Elizabeth Jernigan, M.B. Van Dorn, Michael John Casey, Richard Rowan, Colleen Delaney, Kate Foster, Ren Casey, Jeff Baker, David Elias, Lily Beacon, Ken Jackson, Christopher Graybill, Lily David, Amanda Thickpenny, and Dylan Lynch. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Timothy Lynch. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Temeskin Wubna. Original music by Chris Rowan. Adapted for graphic audio by Timothy Lynch. If you enjoyed The Survivalist, be sure to look for Ryder Stacey's Doomsday Warrior, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another Graphic Audio title.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Is there anything we can do to help him?
Say a prayer for him if you like. That's about all we can do.
Bo and Scratch have had their share of trouble. When they meet up with the young Tinhorn and have to handle the untimely death of Marshal John Henry Braddock, Bo and Scratch try to make a man of Jake Riley while bringing law to Whiskey Flats.
Did I kill him? Did I bust him to pieces? That Tinhorn tried to cheat me.
Chesterfield Pike! In the name of the law, I'm looking for Chesterfield Pike.
Sounds like a gnat buzzing in here. Anybody hear that same annoying little noise?
Where's Rawhide?
A fella come in and told her there'd been some more rustling somewhere. She told him not to fly off the handle. He left right after that, and so did Miss Rawhide.
By God, nobody treats my men like that!
Let it slide back into the holster, amigo. Then unbuckle that gun belt and drop it.
Do you know who I am?
I don't really give a damn.
Sidewinders number 2, Massacre at Whiskey Flats.
Afraid he's gonna get us into trouble? It seems to have a way of finding us anyway.
Yeah, well, maybe so, but that ain't no reason to give it a helping hand.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series, available only at www.graphicaudio.net.